Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Four Portland men are robbed after meeting a man on an adult chat line. A truck driver is killed by his own truck, and Russia loses their new satellite.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, August 18th, 2011. A Portland semi-driver was killed Wednesday when his own rig rolled over him. Salem police said the accident happened just before 4 p.m. on Commercial Street near Rural Avenue. Dean L. Pollard, 54, pulled into a parking lot of a small mall and went into a business asking for directions when the semi-truck began rolling forward. He ran out to stop it and was run over. The truck crashed into the nearby Johnston's Cleaners. Pollard was a longtime driver for Christensen Oil of Portland. No one in the store was hurt.
What mall is this?
It just said a small mall.
Okay.
In
That's
Salem.
Not the name of it. It's not like a charming Lilliputian shopping establishment.
Not the small mall.
Okay.
It's a small mall. Four men were victims of a robbery that started with an adult chat line encounter. The chats took place between May 22nd and June 17th in Portland and Gresham, according to Portland Police Bureau spokesman Sergeant Pete Simpson. The suspect and victims would agree to meet after the chats. The suspect posed as a police officer and would demand money. In one case, he used a gun three times and a knife once in the robberies. Elijah Whitney Cowens, 34, was arrested and accused of first and second degree robbery, first-degree burglary, second-degree kidnapping, and impersonating a police officer.
When you say the chats took place in Gresham, what does that mean?
They took place...
How does a chat take place in Gresham?
I'm really not sure. I'm thinking that the incidents where the guy robbed them took place.
So the robbery took place in Gresham.
Yes, the robberies. Again...
I mean, I could have figured that part out myself, I suppose.
Yeah, but I reads the news... most times, I don't write the news.
Okay, all right.
I am sending over to you a photograph of Elijah Cowens, who looks sort
Is he
of...
a handsome man?
He's not...
A looker?
He's not a terribly unattractive man, but he's one of those guys who looks really stupid because his eyes are way too close together. So you kind of just go, oh! You know, when you first look at him, and you expect him to talk like a character from Bill Cosby and the Cosby Kids.
See, is he Gresham attractive?
Yes.
Okay.
He's Gresham attractive.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also Science on the March. That is all coming your direction. And then next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program and Rick Emerson Show Com. You don't want to miss a moment of it. If you do, you will rue the day, ladies and gentlefolk. You will, you'll never be able to forgive yourselves, frankly. You can also get this program on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. That is how you can take these delights with you wherever it is you might travel. Here is Don Taylor.
Russia lost contact with a communication satellite shortly after its launch on Thursday, the government space agency said. The latest in a series of failures that has dogged the nation's space program.
In your face.
The Express AM-4 satellite, described by officials as Russia's most powerful telecommunications satellite, was launched atop a Proton-M booster rocket from the Russia-leased Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan.
I think they're just renting movies now and calling them space programs.
The Federal Space Agency said in a statement the booster worked fine, but a subsequent failure of the additional upper stage, the BRIS-M, resulted in the loss of communications with the satellite. It said efforts were being made to reestablish contact with the over 6-ton craft.
Launch worked fine. It is aiming and landing where we have troubles.
Where did it go?
We cannot find a craft after launch, but this is detail.
The satellite has been insured for 7.5 billion rubles.
We put 50 cents in machine on the way to airport, and it's a machine insured.
That's about $260 million. That's with the Russian Ingostrak insurance company. The satellite was to be put into a geostationary orbit to provide digital TV broadcasting for Russia's far eastern regions. Broadcasters said the failure would likely delay the planned transfer to digital TV.
Then when we call the insurance company, no answer. We go, just empty office, no phones.
People calling up and saying, why do I not have television? And them having to say, well, we lost the satellite.
All right.
Yeah.
Take that, Ivan. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com today. We've got a Geek Watch and I believe a...
I don't know what we've got. My life is chaos and tragedy. I'm a little bit behind. We will have watches. We will have watches aplenty. We will have watches that will delight and amaze you.
It's going to be another one of these, isn't it?
It's Thursday.
All right, let's blame it on Thursday. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A bomb squad was destroyed at a Portland apartment.
A bomb squad was destroyed.
Well, their hopes and dreams were destroyed. Their self-esteem was crushed. Now, a suspicious device was destroyed at a Portland park by the bomb squad on Thursday morning. Portland bomb squad was called to Arbor Lodge Park this morning at North Greenlee and North Bryant around 9 a.m. on a report of a suspicious device. A caller reported that a soda bottle wrapped in tape that appeared to have been detonated. There were also two tennis balls wrapped in tape with a wire. One of the balls appears to have been detonated. The bomb squad destroyed the intact tennis ball and searched the remainder of the park for other devices. No one was injured.
This is one of those things, actually, that has become, it's started to become a bit of an issue in certain cities where there are smallish, plasticky, homemade explosives that are just sort of being left places for no readily apparent reason. And that children are learning to assemble with instructions off the magical Intertron. So there was actually a whole piece about this I read in... Man, who was it? I'm doing the LA Times or the... does the LA Times still exist? What am I thinking of when I say, does the LA Times still exist? I'm thinking of the Seattle PI, which does not exist at this point anymore. There is still the Seattle Times. The Seattle PI is gone long time. The LA Times is still a paper. The LA Weekly still exists as well, right? So a prominent Los Angeles newspaper that was there
The Herald Examiner.
There, that's gone?
That closed,
Is that
yeah.
the thing I'm thinking of that isn't there anymore? Anyway, so there's a big piece about this in L.A. where apparently there's some sort of viral video that went around for a while. Not on YouTube, but on some sort of, you know, some sort of not quite in the popular consciousness variation of YouTube that went around before the cops had it taken down. And it was a whole how to make an explosive device for like $3 with stuff you can get down the street. And they had this real rash of problems with people just dropping off these 2-liter soda bottles filled with stuff that would, like, you know, take your arm off if you happened to pick it up at the wrong moment. And so that that material has, they've tried to expunge that from the internet, but of course that's a tricky proposition. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, showing, of course, by the way, that science always trends toward evil. Just as you know, Nietzsche said that chaos always trends toward order, science always trends toward mustache-twirling evil. I, Rick Emerson, I'm in favor of that, so long as I've got my arms.
By the way, the file that you dropped in the Dropbox that is ostensibly the audio clips...
I didn't put that in the Dropbox yet, so whatever you're looking at is not that.
It says News 818. And it's a PDF, a 15-page PDF of a...
That's not audio.
Okay.
You can disregard that.
Okay.
I'll tell you when it's there.
You titled it.
Big Daddy Rick will tell you when the audio's ready,
okay.
Don. You just don't worry your pretty little head.
As it's titled the same as
it's,
the news is usually titled.
Yes. When I tell you it's there, that's when it's there.
You told me you were doing it, so I looked and I saw something that was titled like you titled things, so I thought that was...
You worry about saying bomb squad correctly.
Okay. A Florida woman accused of throwing a basil plant at her husband after a meat-related...
Basil!
A meat-related argument...
Come on! Faulty Towers for the win.
Yes.
Oh, come on. That was funny. Somebody
that
somewhere
funny.
Is laughing.
Yes. Basil Plant and her husband, after a meat-related argument, was arrested on a misdemeanor charge, according to a recently released police report. Accused Herb Erler... I quit. That's it. I'm giving up. Okay, no, I'm not. Let's try this again. Accused Herb Erler... Andrea Antoine Pierre, 52, was jailed on a battery charge Monday following an apparent culinary confrontation with her spouse at their home on Southwest Curtis Street in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Antoine Pierre's 60-year-old husband told police he was in the kitchen preparing food when his wife got home. The report states they then began to argue about what type of meat was supposed to be cooked. The report did not specify what sort of meat they were arguing about. As the husband walked away during the dispute, Antoine Pierre stands accused of throwing a potted basil plant at her husband's back, hitting his left shoulder. Basil, an aromatic herb often associated with Italian and Thai cuisine, is not often used as a weapon.
Okay.
Anyway, he got past his wife, went outside. Then she picked up rocks from the garden and started throwing them at him, but she missed. And she told police that she argued with her husband over dinner. She said he called her mom a liar. And then upon hearing this, she threw a plant at them.
So she had basil. They were at the home. She was arguing. She became increasingly annoyed. She grabbed the potted herb of basil, threw it at him.
Right.
Okay. So it was a basil wrath home. Ha! Ha!
It was indeed.
Sam! Rick Emerson for the win. Yeah! Woo! Basil Rathbone.
Basil Rathbone.
Not like Basil Rathbone. Rathbone.
Except for the sort of rhyming and the
exactly.
Reference.
That's what you got. Assonance is what that is, Don. If you look in the Dropbox, not now, but perhaps in 30 or 40 seconds after it goes over the internet, you'll see a thing called News 0818 Audio.
I see it now.
There you go. You know what that is?
That would not be a PDF of a 15-page web cap.
No,
of a,
no.
In
fact, it is audio.
Then look at that.
Yes, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's read one of those. A weather expert claims his advice apparently went unheeded the night of the Indiana State Fair stage collapse that killed five people. Meteorologist Paul Poteet says fair organizers sought his advice as a storm moved into the area.
Should we assume that the concert can go on time? That's what I said. No, I think it would be best to delay it.
Poteet says he advised he would delay the start of the concert's second set because of the weather, but that didn't happen.
Sounds like the Midwest ass-covering front came in right on time, though.
If you ask any meteorologist, they would probably tell you we're always surprised at the times that people don't really, you know, heed the warnings.
You know what's, in my alternate reality that, like, it sort of exists in my head, I don't have a job as a meteorologist, I just have a job as a meteorologist, which is just where people ask me what sort of meat they should have on any given day, and I say, pork chops!
See, I was thinking it would be that you would tell people whether or not it was time to put money in their meter.
No. Or you could actually be a meteorologist, which would be like some sort of a dating service, like some sort of a personal assistant planner for like when you should go hook up with maybe with a guy in Gresham who said he's got a real good time he's going to show you.
And
or not, maybe not.
And maybe then not get robbed, because that's what people don't want. Three people in Carroll County, Maryland, were injured when a birthday party went off with a literal bang. Fire officials said a 13-year-old girl and her parents were injured after a low-level explosion inside their home. Authorities said they believe someone mistook some small fireworks for candles and put them on a birthday cake and lit them. All three of the injured are said to be in good condition. Officials are investigating the incident.
When they say in good condition, they mean just physically or...
Well,
I mean, really, if you're mistaking
shaky.
Explosives for birthday candles, it seems like maybe you've got larger issues there.
Yes. Although that would be a birthday that is memorable in years past when you're getting together with the family years from now. And they say, hey, remember when you were 14 and we blew up your cake?
Did they describe,
and we thought we were going to die?
Did they say exactly what kind of the what explosives they were that looked like candles on a birthday cake?
They're probably those little tiny firecrackers.
Yeah, but those don't look anything like birthday candles. Birthday candles are, first of all, one is made out of, one's a candle
one's
and
made
one
out of wax,
isn't.
Yes, and
it's, I mean, one looks like a candle and one doesn't.
No, these people were probably deeply, deeply stupid.
Okay.
But you know.
I was hoping that was the cause. It usually is.
I mean, if it was one of those really great big giant ones that like shoots fire into the sky.
Well, it makes me wonder what they've been using for candles this whole time. Like, had they just been sticking road flares on the cake and they just weren't really like, no one had bothered to make that distinction for them. You're listening to...
Go get some of the candles, Ma.
Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, you can do that. It's also available as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Yes, yes it is. Here's Don Taylor.
Michelle Bachmann is again drawing criticism for what some reporters say is her security team's unusually harsh physical confrontations with the media. Politico detailed today a total of 5 incidents of political journalists claiming to have been shoved or threatened with violence, or both, by Bachmann's staff, including a report last week that her security team pushed CNN's Don Lemon and a previously unreported accusation that a Bachmann staffer threatened to break the arm of a foreign journalist covering her campaign. The Bachmann camp's rough handling of reporters first drew headlines last month after a Time reporter wrote about how ABC News reporter Brian Ross was shoved while trying to ask the candidate a question at a South Carolina rally. While Ross later downplayed the confrontation, other reporters have been more vocal about what they see as overly harsh tactics. CNN's Lemon reported on air about his physical confrontation with the Bachmann team, saying that he was elbowed by a staffer and by Bachmann's husband, Marcus. Lemon said, I told them, I asked them not to elbow me. Then her husband, Marcus, started doing the same thing. And then he elbowed me into the cart. And I said, you just pushed me into the cart. And he goes, no, you did it yourself. Norwegian reporter Are Tagvold Flatten told Politico he was threatened while trying to snap a photo of Bachmann in Ames, Iowa on Sunday after he'd forgotten his press credentials.
Is this a whole thing of like where they shove him into the fence and he goes, don't shove me into the fence? They go, why are you shoving yourself into the fence? And they're grabbing his arm and they're hitting him in his face with it.
I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you.
Seriously.
Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself. Yeah. So the Norwegian fellow forgot his press credentials and was taking photos. He claims one security guard gestured to another and said, this guy will break your arm if you take one step closer.
Awesome.
Bachmann's camp denies the accusation.
That's fantastic. Somewhere, you know, the thing about it is like Richard Nixon, wherever it is he might be in the afterlife, if there is such a thing, is just looking up or down or slantways or from wherever, and he's just nodding in sage approval. And by the way, I should note that every single thing, I mean, we've now reached this great sort of nexus where every single thing Nixon ever did that earned him the ire of the press or the people, the rest of the world, or just of humanity in general, has now not only become somewhat acceptable, but just seems to be par for the course. It just is daily. It's just daily business. You know, some guy from the press irritates you, you just have one of your goons take him off and just pummel him into dust. That's exactly the sort of thing that Nixon would have approved of. I mean, hell, that's the sort of thing Nixon did approve of. He just didn't really... He wasn't really able to do it to the extent that he wanted. You know, like Ron Ziegler wasn't really able to go back and tase everybody on the press plane. I mean, they would have if they could have.
Of course, he also had the National Guard to just hose hippies, too. So,
yeah, no.
You know, those were the days.
Seriously. I mean, if only those... Really, those were the golden times. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
I also wanted to mention, also in the Bachmann story, it's not just like the so-called liberal left-leaning papers that they're going after. A camera also captured Fox News correspondent Steve Brown telling a Bachmann staff member in Iowa, do not put your hands on me. Don't ever do it again.
Awesome.
So apparently they're just shoving all the journalists around.
See, I don't hear anything in any of these stories ever that makes me less hopeful that she becomes candidate or president. There's nothing I've heard right now to dissuade me from that. Everything I hear spells entertainment. So, I mean, you know, whatever. You bring it on. I don't care.
A photo of a new U.S. ambassador to China carrying his own backpack and ordering his own coffee at an airport has charmed Chinese citizens who are not used to such frugality from their officials. Zhao Hui Tang, a businessman from Bellevue, Washington, snapped the photo Friday on his iPhone when he spotted Gary Locke wearing a backpack at the counter of an airport Starbucks. Locke is the first Chinese-American ambassador to China and a former governor of Washington State. Tang uploaded the photo to the Chinese social media network Sino Weibo because he thought it was cool to run into the new ambassador at the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. He didn't expect it to generate 40,000 reposts and thousands of comments. "This is something unbelievable in China," said Tang, who is a Chinese-American citizen. "Even for low-ranking officials, we don't do things for ourselves. Someone goes to buy the coffee for them. Someone carries their bags for them." Locke tried to use a coupon or a voucher for the coffee, but the barista rejected it. The ambassador then paid with a credit card. Tang is an executive of internet advertising at a firm called AdSage, and he was flying from Seattle to Silicon Valley. Locke was leaving from China, for China, from the next gate over.
Wait, is this the American ambassador to China or from China to the States?
This is the American ambassador to China.
Oh, I see.
He used to be governor of Washington.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, so it's apparently quite a big deal in China right now because everyone thinks it's kind of awesome. Because
he used coupon. He's charming.
Yeah, he bought his own coffee. He's not carrying his own bags. Oh, my God. You know, because in China, even low-level county executives travel in chauffeur-driven cars with, like, a whole bunch of secretaries and security officers with them.
Okay.
So this guy's just traveling on his own, carrying a bag and buying his own coffee. He can't really be a man of importance.
They should come to my neighborhood. There's a guy who just carries everything he owns in a shopping cart and actually has to clean himself with fistfuls of leaves. I mean, you would really be astounded. You might think he was the president.
Oh, I'm sure they have people like that in China. They're just not executives for companies.
I see.
They just,
I understand.
You know,
okay.
They're just regular poke. They're the people that work at the Starbucks.
Okay, it's all come together for me now.
Tobacco companies want a judge to put a stop to a new graphic cigarette label that includes the sewn-up corpse of a smoker. And also some that have pictures of diseased lungs.
What do you mean the sewn-up corpse of a smoker?
I mean it's a post-autopsy photo.
Oh, I see. So he's been all scooped out like a pumpkin.
Right.
Okay.
And also pictures of diseased lungs, saying they unfairly urge adults to shun their legal products and will cost millions of dollars to produce. Four of the five largest U.S. tobacco companies sued the federal government Tuesday, saying the warnings violate their free speech rights. Never before in the United States have producers of a lawful product been required to use their own packaging and advertising to convey an emotionally charged government message urging adult consumers to shun their products. They said somewhat reasonably, if you think about it. The companies led by R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, Lorillard Tobacco Company, said the warnings no longer simply convey facts to allow people to make a decision on whether to smoke. They instead force them to put government anti-smoking advocacy prominently on their packs, on their own packs and their own brands. They want a judge to stop the labels.
Well, when you think about it, there are any number of legal products that the government puts one might call negative inducements on. I mean, the government, you know, like if you buy, like when you go to buy a car, you go to buy a house, you make any sort of investment, or you play the lottery. I mean, the government puts things on there saying, like, this is a bad idea. You're really going to lose all of your cash and you're going to bring shame on your family. You shouldn't buy any lottery tickets. Buy lottery tickets! So it's not like we're strangers to sort of mixed messages in this country. There's all kinds of things that we try to sell you with one hand and then on the other. Like on booze, doesn't it say, like, if you drink this, your kids will be retarded and have nine heads?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean,
well, and there are already warnings on cigarette packages. I believe the lawsuit is just stating that having graphic photos of people with holes in their necks and sewn-up corpses might be going a little bit too far.
Nah, it's not going far enough. These are amusing, but it'll wear off after a while. We'll get used to them.
Well, then we'll move on to the next thing, and like fast food companies will have to have those horrible photos that the news services use of fat people just from the neck down walking around.
Oh, my God. They should totally have a picture of Walter Hudson, like, being taken on a forklift out of the side of his Brooklyn apartment.
They just slap that on the side of every Big Mac.
Ah, oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
All right. Or just, you know, or I wonder if that's why McDonald's doesn't have the Grimace anymore, because he's clearly overweight. I mean, the Grimace clearly has some sort of, he doesn't even have any bone structure anymore.
Yeah.
He's just an amorphous purple blob.
That's true.
All right.
He's kind of a bad role model for the kids. And also, you don't want to think that that's where your Shamrock Shake is going to end up.
Hey, let me ask you this. Did you know that it has never been, what word am I looking for? It's never been specified exactly what race Yoda belongs to.
I did not know that, nor did I actually care.
Yeah. But doesn't it strike you as odd that there's something in the Star Wars universe that hasn't been specified by somebody somewhere?
Yeah, that is true. Especially
that's
something as important as Yoda.
That's what I'm saying.
Our friend Thomas Guild, this has nothing to do with Legion of Doom, because no one heard this, probably. Well, some of the people did, but we were talking yesterday on
the Rick
Emerson Show.
Yes, no one heard it.
We were talking yesterday on the Rick Emerson Show about...
In a closet.
Yes, just among ourselves, with our hands over the mics, And we were talking about the colors of Star Trek uniforms. There was this piece about King Abdullah of Jordan.
Can I just leave the room for the rest
of this? Well, no, it's like, and you immediately, I read the story and said that King Abdullah, when he was a prince, he had a walk-on as an extra or something on Star Trek, and it said he wore a green and black uniform. You immediately got all these messages in the text box saying, there were no green uniforms on Star Trek. That's not true. Thomas Gill sent me the YouTube clip.
Oh, I saw it.
Of the guy. He's wearing a green uniform.
Yeah, I know.
So all of you people jumping on, I'm the biggest Star Trek expert. You don't know what you're talking about. Apparently there were green uniforms. So just shut your pie holes.
Wait, let me check. Still don't care.
Okay. Well, you know. Wrapped in foil and tucked in a carry-on bag, bear paws were on their way to Asia, part of a shadowy international trade in animal parts that flourishes even as governments step up efforts to contain it.
You mean like a cruller?
Yes. Or like Chipotle burritos.
All right, just check.
The paws, three of them from two different black bears, were spotted early Sunday by security staff at Vancouver International Airport, where a 39-year-old man was detained as he attempted to board a flight to China. The man, a Vancouver resident, was arrested and released on a promise to appear in provincial court in Richmond on October 6th. BC prosecutors have yet to approve charges, but investigators are expected to recommend stiff fines and possible jail time. Sergeant Dave Jevons of the Conservation Office said, "We will be seeking from the Crown a recommendation for a very stiff penalty. We want people to know that if you do try this, i.e. cutting off bears' paws and taking them to China, it will not be just a slap on the wrist. You will be significantly fined. If you're a hunter, we will seek to have your hunting privileges suspended." That's where we look for the deterrence effect.
It seems like if you're
worst thing they'll do is just tell you you can't hunt anymore.
It seems like if you're able to get close enough to a bear to cut off its paws, you should get to keep the paws and do whatever you want. I couldn't do that. I mean, honestly, if you're able to get the paws off of a bear, you deserve them. You've earned them. The paws belong to you, in my opinion.
Well, it also seems to me that if you're doing something that is so obviously and ridiculously illegal as smuggling bear paws to China, telling them they're, like, going hunting without your license and your wallet probably is not going to be a big deal to you.
Well, is it illegal to take the bear paws on a plane here, or is it only illegal to take them over the border into China? Whose law are they violating? Ours or theirs?
It's legal to hunt both black and grizzly bears in British Columbia, but it's illegal to sell their parts.
So what if you, is it legal to give their parts away? Is this another one of those things where it's illegal to sell something that it's legal to give? Like, if I just killed a bear and gave it to you, is that illegal?
That I don't know. But I think that when you're hiding it, wrapping it in foil and putting it in your carrier and taking it to Asia, I think it's there's a fairly good assumption, granted they will have to prove it in court, but there's a fairly good assumption that you're going to sell it there because they're highly prized in China, and they're, of course, used, you know, in medicines and...
Just boner pills again?
Boner pills, probably. Yeah. Bear gallbladders are also used for things over there. And so there's a big, big market for
the key is just to say that you're just going to be given the bear paws as like a present at a bris.
They're a gift. Yes. They're a birthday gift for my nephew.
He loves bears.
He loves bears.
Can't get enough of them.
I gave him a Lucky Rabbit's paw last year, and he said it wasn't lucky enough.
He's a big fan of Tenderheart Bear, and so I'm going to tell him that I'm just starting with the paws, and the rest will arrive. He'll get a piece of Tenderheart every year until the ransom is paid. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is 12:28 Pacific time. Coming up here in just a few moments, we got your Science on the March. Later on, your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program with a fistful of amusement and comedy for you and occasional bits of information that may or may not be fabricated. Also, Geek Watch coming up, and then tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, that is Friday, we'll have Mr. Big Jim Willis in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101, talking about Mr. Louis C.K. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do that science news, in fact.
By God, let's do it. Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com if you are online or on Facebook. Squires Electric is their name on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/Squires Electric, or you can call them at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors, helping to wire up your home, wire up your business, helping to repair those things if they should go amok, if they should go astray, if they should go askew somehow. They can make sure that all of those things are working properly and correctly. You contact them at squireselectric.com and you say, "Hey, I heard about you on that Legion of News show. Could you come to my home or business today, perhaps?" And they'll say, "Let's check. Yes, yes, we can. And here's about what it's going to cost to get that done. And you say, thanks. Now I know whether or not I can afford this. Hey, I can, because you are both reasonable and efficient. Then they come to your place of business, or they come to your home. They get the wiring taken care of, and then you are free to go about your business, fear, vanquished, anxieties mollified. So you don't worry that you're going to flip a switch, and then the whole place goes, boom, because you don't want that. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. Proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
A new study has found that Oregon State University students aren't eating their vegetables. They're not even eating one serving per day. Five servings are recommended per day. Researchers surveyed the eating habits of 582 college students. Men reported eating five servings of fruits and vegetables per week.
Servings.
That's one more serving than women reported eating. The survey also found that women aren't getting enough fiber and men are eating too much fat. This survey was done by the university and is published in the Journal of Nutrition, Education, and Behavior.
We're actually taking time and money, presumably, to show that college students eat poorly.
Yes.
All right. Well done.
They also, I wonder if they also gauge their pizza consumption. Because federal weather forecasters say the country can expect more of the same weather for this fall, especially for drought-struck Texas and Oklahoma. And they urge coastal regions to be ready for a hurricane. The three-month weather prediction sees no relief from the record southwest drought. It also predicts warmer than normal weather for a wide swath of the country from Maine to Arizona. Only the southeast, northwest, and California will likely be spared. Woohoo! We win! That's because forecasters say that a La Nina system will keep rain away. Climate Prediction Center Operations Chief Ed Olenek says that a high-pressure system that has kept tropical storms away from the east has moved, making a U.S. hurricane strike more possible. The last hurricane to strike the U.S. was in 2008.
So what they're basically saying is it's going to be really, really warm everywhere except in those places where it's not. And in those places, it's going to be cool.
Well, it's also saying that, Texas and Oklahoma, for example, that have been dealing with a drought, that drought is going to extend in through the fall.
Right.
They're not going to get any relief from that anytime soon.
And it's like here, where there's really been no summer as such, it's been cooler than usual. That will also continue, apparently.
Yeah, apparently so. But other parts of the country, they will be getting warmer than the normal weather for the fall. But we here in the Northwest will actually, we're going to be spared this horror of heat.
So, the global dampening that we're getting.
And also, we're not on the East Coast, so we don't have to worry about the hurricane.
Or about guys named Sal.
Except that, if there's a hurricane, then we'll all have to be sad and write things on Twitter about it. So.
Well, you can do that. I'm gonna worry about what I can loot.
Okay. Fritz Bach, who aided transplant survival, died at the age of 77. The cause was cardiac arrest, according to his son, Peter. Dr. Bach's seminal contribution was to develop a process for systematically mixing cells from the patient with cells from potential donors until a donor is found whose cells do not react adversely with those of the patient. That technique provides a measure of how compatible the tissues from the two bodies will likely be. The more likely, the less possibility of rejection. In the 1960s, Dr. Bach applied his approach to bone marrow, which contains the stem cells that produce the body's blood cells. In the 1950s, scientists had succeeded in transplanting bone marrow into people whose own marrow had been ravaged by nuclear radiation or cancer-killing chemicals. By the late 60s, doctors were beginning to try transplants on different kinds of patients. Dr. Bach's techniques made it possible to determine in advance that antibodies from the donor and the patient would not fight to the death. His primary procedure was used twice in 1968. Then later in 1975, Dr. Bach announced a way to speed up his process of analysis to hours rather than days. That made it applicable to transplants of cadaver kidneys, which must be used within 48 hours.
I'm from a band called Cadaver Kidneys. Just FYI.
A section of skin with melanoma, which is benign or malignant skin tension, that would...
Uh-huh.
Let's start this again.
Hold on, just give a little bit of... There we go.
Oh, we should have had that during the Chinese ambassador story.
Don, don't be racist. You sicken me.
A breakthrough drug that could extend survival in some patients with advanced skin cancer was approved yesterday by U.S. regulators, offering the first new treatment for melanoma in 13 years. Zelboraf, that's a terrible...
King of the underworld.
...was given the nod by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration more than 2 months early, after a global clinical trial showed it could work better than chemotherapy by targeting a gene mutation found in about half of patients. While the drug, made by Genentech, a U.S. subsidiary of the Swiss pharmaceutical giant Roche, is far from a cure for people with metastatic melanoma, its approval was hailed as a really big deal, quote-unquote, by research advocates. Zelboraf is the second melanoma drug to obtain approval this year, following Yervoy in March.
Yervoy is a singer of traditional Scandinavian hymns. He's huge around the solstice time.
Well, Zelboraf works by blocking a protein that's involved with cell growth, and the approval of Zelboraf comes with a diagnostic test that's going to determine if patients have the type of cancer the drug can treat. And once you got both of those in place, you may be able to treat your skin cancer with Zelboraf.
I wish I had like a really loud thunderclap. I could do sort of a, you know, I am Zelboraf, and he would be like the guy that comes out of like a rusty tin can you find in an alley, gives you half a wish.
I'm gonna put that aside so that Patrick can use that later as a character name when he plays D&D.
Totally. You're listening to Legion of News. This is your Science on the March portion.
A teenager from Mexico became the first person in the United States to die after being bitten by a vampire bat and infected with rabies last week. The 19-year-old man was a migrant farm worker who had been bitten on the heel by a vampire bat in his native Michoacan on July 15, 2010.
Taking diseases that honest, hardworking Americans could take.
That was 10 days before he left for the U.S. to pick sugarcane at a plantation in Louisiana. Centers for Disease Control said this case represents the first reported human death from a vampire bat rabies virus variant in the United States.
Woo!
The unusually aggressive form of rabies has an incubation period of just 15 days, compared to the median 85 days seen in other cases of rabies. Although vampire bat populations are currently confined to Latin America, climate change could be forcing their populations northward, leading to more cases of human infection in the southern United States.
I think we all know they come here for healthcare, Don.
Vampire bats.
Seriously.
Zombies and vampire bats.
Honestly.
Oh, you know, the next thing, decade.
They come here and then they have little bat children and then we can't make them leave and it's a whole thing.
And they all ride in one small little car.
Political. Have you seen how many of those bats they can fit into a cave? Honestly, there's thousands of them.
Finally, the Environmental Protection Agency is emerging as a favorite target of the Republican presidential candidates, who portray it as the very symbol of heavy-handed regulatory agenda imposed by the Obama administration that they say is strangling the economy. Representative Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota wants to padlock the EPA's doors, as does former Speaker Newt Gingrich. Governor Rick Perry of Texas wants to impose an immediate moratorium on environmental regulation.
By the way, as opposed to Ron Paul, who just wants to abolish the EPA.
Well, yeah, let's see. Ron Paul says he wants environmental disputes settled by the states or the courts.
Yeah, that's always that's always where the best decisions come from, is at the state level. You can ask anybody who tried to go to school in 1965.
Only Mitt Romney has a kind word for the EPA, and that is qualified to his opposition to proposed regulation of carbon dioxide and other gases that contribute to global warming.
Uh-huh.
Opposition to regulation and skepticism about climate change have become tenets of Republican orthodoxy, but they are embraced with extraordinary intensity this year because of the faltering economy, high fuel prices, the Tea Party passion for smaller government, and an activist Republican base that insists on strict adherence to the party's central agenda. But while attacks on the EPA, climate change science, and environmental regulations more broadly are surefire applause lines with Republican primary audiences, those views may prove a liability in the general election, according to pollsters, because the American people, by substantial majorities, are concerned about air and water pollution, and they largely trust the EPA, according to national surveys. Rick Perry, in particular, by the way, has been at war with the EPA almost since the day he took office as Texas governor. He's leading a group of states in a lawsuit seeking to block the agency from putting in place rules limiting greenhouse gas emissions from power plants, refineries, and other sources. On Monday, Perry called on Obama to halt all regulations because, Mr. Perry said, his EPA regulations are killing jobs all across America. In his book, Fed Up, Our Fight to Save America from Washington, Mr. Perry described global warming science as, quote, one contrived phony mess that is falling apart under its own weight, and a secular carbon cult led by false prophets like Al Gore. And that's your science news.
There's your Science on the March for Thursday right here at Legion of News, part of Cascadia.fm. You can find out more about Squires Electric, the fine sponsors of Science on the March, by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. Yes, that's what you can do. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news and next hour the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused or, you know, or just fret about the waste of money in which you've engaged for 32 cents a day. That is just $6.99 a month. That's at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Two people were arrested Wednesday night during a Sporting Kansas City soccer game after someone hit...
A Sporting Kansas City soccer game.
That's the name of the soccer team, by the way. Sporting Kansas City.
Oh, it's not like... That's not like the name of a suburb. Like here in glorious Sporting Kansas City, we have... It's not like Bethany.
No, it's just a terrible name for a soccer team. Okay. They're called Sporting Kansas City. After someone hit Sporting's goalkeeper in the face with a bobblehead. Goalkeeper Jimmy Nelson came within 10 minutes of a shutout despite being hit in the head by the Omar Bravo bobblehead doll that was thrown from the stands. The incident happened shortly after Sporting scored the first goal of the game. There's not any clear video of it happening, but video does show Nielsen walking near the goal and the net shaking. The bobblehead that smacked Nielsen knocked him down, and he was laid out for about 4 minutes. Paramedics bandaged his cheek, and then Nielsen played on as Sporting beat the Portland Timbers 3-1.
What is the... this is a soccer game.
Yes.
Okay, so this is really the difference, by the way, when I talk about European views of soccer as opposed to the American so-called embrace of soccer. You know, the day that there's a European soccer player who's knocked unconscious by a bobblehead, that is the day that really the sun has set on that empire once and for all. You would never... I think you could probably cut off the head of your average European soccer player and he would continue to play through the rest of that period.
Yeah.
And then he would, you know, and then he would threaten your family and he would break a bottle of Yukon Jack over you.
Kansas City player, on the other hand, though, just out like a light.
Seriously. We're just, you know, Americans...
You'd probably
just
hit him with one of those foam bats and he'd be down.
Americans just aren't... We just don't have the constitution for it. We're just not built for soccer.
No.
You
don't see us tearing apart our stands.
No.
We can't.
We couldn't
rip the seats up with our bare hands if we got angry.
Honestly, I think that we really need to take several years before we start playing anybody outside of the continental United States because we're really just begging for trouble. And somebody else notes, and this is, I think, a fair point, I can't imagine how you would even throw a bobblehead hard enough, like, from anywhere because they're largely just made of foam and, like, light plastic. How would you even get enough velocity on that thing? And how would it possibly have enough weight to knock a guy, unless his brain is like covered with an eggshell?
Well, maybe if you were up in like the deck section, the next section up, you know, it could pick up some speed as it fell.
Except it wouldn't. Well, that assumes that he's below you in a mine shaft where it falls straight down.
I don't know.
You're throwing it out.
Lob it out. And then maybe, you know, get a corner to the temple, maybe. I don't know.
How big is the bobblehead? Is it the size of a car? Okay, here's what we need to do. We need to just forget about the soccer team. Whoever it is that threw the bobblehead needs to be drafted by the Mets, like now, today. Because clearly that guy's got an arm on him. That really is the larger issue here.
I thought you were going to suggest that we have an experiment where we have somebody, like, stand, you know, outside in the street and we, like, throw a bobblehead at them off the roof.
That seems like a bad idea. I think our lawyers would call that tempting liability.
A High Springs, Florida couple accused of hoarding 692 cats have been arrested. Penny and Stephen Lefkowitz, the owners of Haven Acres Cat Sanctuary, are each facing 35 counts of animal cruelty. They have bonded out of jail. Alachua County Animal Services removed the cats in the sanctuary in High Springs in June in what is the biggest case of cat hoarding the Humane Society of the United States has ever participated in and is in the top three of the largest cat hoarding cases in U.S. history. The cats were put in a warehouse that had become a makeshift shelter. About 100 of them had to be put down. The rest have been receiving treatment and are being spayed and neutered by University of Florida veterinary students. They will be put up for adoption in coming weeks. Alachua County Animal Service said the agency received calls from people who needed to get rid of their cats and left them at Haven Acres. The agency said residents thought they were taking their cats to, quote, a country club environment.
It doesn't really seem like a sanctuary is the right word for this. It seemed that might have been a little bit of a misnomer.
Yeah. Penny Lefkowitz said in June she doesn't believe she and or her husband are hoarders. She said they were just trying to help out as many of the cats as possible. Keep in mind, there were 692 of them.
How would you even feed that many cats? I mean, really, honestly, how did they... I mean, were they jillionaires?
Well, they say they spent more than $33,000 on the shelter last year.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean... Okay.
So she said she didn't think they were hoarders. She said they were just trying to help out as many cats as possible.
Uh-huh.
But she did admit that they may have gone overboard and acquired too many cats.
Look, let's be honest. Really, most of the time, the best way you can help cats is with a gun. That's the best way you can assist them.
Well, not all cats are terrible. You just had the cat rescue people on
Did I
on
say
your,
you
your
should
TV
shoot
show.
Cats?
You said help the cats. Are you saying that you should give tiny guns to cats?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Saying you should arm the cats. What did you think I was saying?
It sounded like you were thinking all cats should be put down.
Seems like somebody's projecting her own subconscious desires.
I
you got
like
that
cats.
Cat you don't like very much.
I'm okay with the cat. We get along.
Okay. See, I understand.
Fine.
No,
my cat's a dick, but we like each other.
We all understand what's going on there. No. I'm saying you should give cats little tiny sidearms.
Oh, okay.
And then let them make their own way in the world. Look, if you're giving a cat a fish, he's never going to. If you teach a cat how to fish, or perhaps rob.
Yeah.
You know, or perhaps mug people at gunpoint for their money or sustenance, then the cats are going to be fine.
And you know, the thing about cats is, if they could use a gun, if they could get their little paws,
they would totally
actually,
do it.
They would do it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as Dan Rather said, the frog had side pockets, he'd carry a firearm.
Not dogs, not so much. Dogs would probably not shoot you. They would still prefer that you, like, give them the food, because they like people. Cats, not so. I think if cats figured out how to just take stuff at gunpoint, they would do it in a second.
No, dogs are the willing and voluntary ally of man. Cats are like one of those. You know what cats are? Cats are to humans as vampires are to humans in that Vampires versus Zombies film that Baron Snyder were talking about a while back, where it's like the zombies rise and then the vampires are obliged to defend humanity to preserve their food source. That's what cats and man are. They're sort of reluctant allies. And that's only, again, because cats aren't big enough to kill us or, you know, use guns on us.
Right.
So if we give them little tiny guns, not big enough to actually harm us, but just, you know, then they can be, you know, then they can just go mug the rest of creation.
I like this idea.
See
like
a bunch
this
of squirrels
plan.
With their hands up.
Yeah. Let's do our entertainment news.
Let's see. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday.
Fashion designer and Project Runway judge Michael Kors married his longtime partner Lance LaPere in Southampton, New York on Tuesday, according to People magazine. Kors, 51, and LaPere met in 1990 when the latter joined Kors' company as an intern. To marry someone as wonderful and special to me as Lance, barefoot on a glorious beach, is more than I could have dreamed of.
Is he the guy, always wears the black suit, kind of the thinning hair, kind of looks like a really thin James Gandolfini?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I dig that
him.
Guy.
Yeah, he's great. And
I
he's,
like him.
He's a really interesting designer, too. I saw a pair of boots from his shoe line on Zappos that I don't wear, like, sort of high-heeled stuff at all. But they were these ladies' boots, and they had about a 3-inch heel on them, and they were like total high fashion, and they came up to about mid calf. But they were designed to look like wading boots that fishermen wear. They were kind of sort of glossy, and they were green, and then they had the khaki like toe stuff, and on the back like fishing boots. Except they had like 3-inch heels, and they were just awesome.
No, he is.
They were also like $400.
He's my favorite judge on Project Runway. I mean, hands down. Yeah. I mean, because the deal is they always have what's her name, who's the the hostess, you know the one who always says that you're out, whoever she is.
Heidi Klum.
Is it Heidi Klum?
Yeah.
Who's the other woman? The one I'm thinking of, the kind of olive skinned woman with the long dark hair.
Oh.
Who is she? You know who I'm talking about.
Are you thinking about Top Chef?
No, I'm thinking about, okay. No, because I don't watch that. I'm talking about Project Runway. There's the three stock judges they always have. There's him, there's Heidi Klum, and then there's the dark-haired woman.
Yeah, it's generally the woman, she's from, she's an editor of one of the fashion magazines.
Yeah, and then they'll rotate through like some sort of like a stylist or a, you know, or designer or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, she used to be like editor of Elle, and now she's editor of Women's Wear Daily or something.
No, you're thinking about, you thought that I was thinking about the chick with the scar on Top Chef. Yeah, no, she's hot too.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of hers. But he is far and away, he's the best judge on, and I think that on, as far as Project Runway goes, I feel like he is the most grounded in his comments. I never get the feeling like he's just saying anything reflexively or to be contrary, and he always seems to have some sort of basis for his opinion on things.
I like him. Russell Armstrong, the ex-husband of one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, committed suicide by hanging, according to the spokesperson for the L.A. County Coroner. This is following his autopsy, so his death has officially been ruled a suicide. The estranged husband of Taylor Armstrong was found last week. The autopsy confirmed initial suspicions, but a comprehensive toxicology report will take up to 6 weeks. Brad Pitt has been seen waving to fans in the Scottish city of Glasgow as he leaves the set of his latest movie, World War Z. The U.S. actor was in Glasgow this week to shoot the zombie horror movie, which is based on a book by Max Brooks. Paramount Film Studio has made every effort to keep the movie under wraps. The set is closed to all media, and no production details have been released. The center of Glasgow, though...
Yes, unless you count all the photographs that came out this week.
Yeah, unless you're in Glasgow taking pictures of it, because they've remodeled downtown Glasgow to look like Philadelphia in the aftermath of a zombie war.
But other than that, no details.
Right.
Other than the photographs and the description and, like, pictures of Brad Pitt.
Right.
No details.
Right. The Glasgow Film Office says the movie involves about 1,200 people and will pour over $3.3 million into the local economy.
So this is one of those things, so when they move on from Glasgow to Britain, that our listener, Jordan, is going to be an extra. He and his girlfriend are going to be extras in that film.
Cool. A drama about the last months of Judy Garland's life is coming to Broadway this spring. Peter Coulter's End of the Rainbow is going to begin performances March 19th at a theater to be announced. Tracy Bennett, a two-time Olivier Award winner who originated the role of Garland in London, will reprise her role on Broadway. Set in London in 1968, the play follows the drama of Garland's final performances in London and her controversial life offstage. It also includes several Garland signature songs, including Over the Rainbow. The show will make its American premiere in January at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis as a tune-up for Broadway.
Don't miss the choreographed sequence at the end where she soils herself while on the phone drinking a bottle of gin.
Oh, Judy, you're so glamorous. Richard Gere has a passion for American vintage guitars, and Christie's Auction House in New York says it will begin selling 110 of his guitars on October 11th. I think we should actually compare his catalog of guitars to the stuff stolen from Portugal the Man. I'm just saying. The timing of this is suspicious. Chrissy says Gere is studied trumpet and is a self-taught pianist and guitarist. He says he's parting with the instruments to support humanitarian causes around the world. He said in a statement announcing the sale that he never planned to put together a guitar collection and bought only ones he liked and that sounded good to him. Included in the sale are brands C.F. Martin, Gibson, Fender, Gretsch, and Epiphone, and guitars once owned by blues guitarist Albert King and reggae musician Peter Tosh.
But now that the fence has told him the stuff is too hot to move, something's got to be done.
A selection of amplifiers is also being sold. So in case you're going to, you know, drop some money on an Albert King guitar, but you don't have an amp, you can pick one up at the Christie's auction. So waiting for something to queue up here. There we go. Tea Party favorite Christine O'Donnell walked very slowly out of an interview with CNN's Piers Morgan last night after she was repeatedly asked all about her views on gay rights. The former Delaware Senate candidate was on the show promoting her new book, Troublemaker, Let's Do What It Takes to Make America Great Again, and had no interest in letting Morgan talk about anything else. And I have a little bit of sound right here. And... oh, I don't have a little bit of sound right here. Okay, let's... there we go. We have a little bit of sound right here.
Are you ready? All
right. Right now, I'm curious about whether you support gay marriage.
You're borderline being a little bit rude. You know, I obviously...
Really?
I obviously want to talk about the issues that I choose to talk about in the book.
Do you answer that question in the book?
I talk about my religious beliefs, yeah. I absolutely
do. Do you talk about gay marriage in the book?
What relevance is that right now? Is there a piece of legislation? I mean, I shouldn't be voting on it.
It's obviously one of the most... It's obviously, as you know, because of Michelle Bachmann's views and others, it's obviously a highly contentious political issue. I'm just curious what your view is. You keep saying it's in the book. So I'm bemused as to why you wouldn't just say it in an interview if it's in the book.
Morgan was undeterred. He explained, it is a highly contentious political issue. I want to know what your view is. After a few more increasingly awkward exchanges, during which O'Donnell continued to maintain he was being rude, Piers Morgan continued onward doggedly, insisting that, you know, he was in a reunion and she should freaking talk about it.
I'm baffled as to why you think I'm being... I think I'm being rather charming and respectful. I'm just asking you questions based on your own public statements and now what you've written in your own book. It's hardly rude to ask you that, surely.
Well, don't you think as a host, if I say this is what I want to talk about, that's what we should address?
Not really, no. You're a politician.
Yeah, okay, I'm being pulled away. You know, we turned down another interview for this.
Where are you going?
So, yes.
Okay.
So, she started darting her eyes about and looking off camera.
Get me out of here.
And was being apparently gestured to by her handlers who were going, "We're going. We're leaving. We're going. Just get up and walk.
No
just
one
go.
Told me there'd be questions."
And at the end, he said, "Oh, it appears the interview has ended because I had the audacity to ask questions based on the stuff that is in the book."
Awesome.
Anyway, it's a good book called Troublemaker. I think we know why it's called Troublemaker.
Fantastic. You know, I don't really care for that guy's show, but I do like to see people who just like a dog with a bone won't let go of the question.
Yeah.
I just
love that she actually flat out said, "But if I say I don't want to talk about something, isn't it your job just to not ask me?"
Right. Well, that's what I was told that I would just sit and look pretty. And, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I have
This
to.
Is all supposed to make me look good.
The best part is when she actually says, "I'm being pulled away." Whatever one thinks about Sarah Palin, that is a thing that she would never say on camera because she has a better sense of herself and her image, rather than, she would never allow herself to look that out of control
right.
of the situation that way. And I don't think Michelle Bachmann would either. I think that's where you see the difference between A-list player and Z-list
yeah.
player.
And she did have some, like, stumbly stuff where she just started doing this thing. "Well, you know, there were other places I could have been today. Like, I was supposed to speak at this GOP women's thing, and I had another interview. We came here and said, so I'm going to go do those."
He should have had a dunking pool and just offered to, she could either ask the question or she could go in the dunking pool.
So that's all the entertainment news.
Should have asked her what she was doing in the woods with Tituba and Goody Proctor. I'm sorry? What?
That's all the entertainment news.
There's your entertainment news for Thursday. You got 2.5 minutes here.
Okay. Menasha, Wisconsin police have
found... No.
Found the owner of a prosthetic leg that was turned into officers earlier this month. Charles Buxton, a Menasha area prosthetic professional, said the leg belongs to one of his former patients who passed away several years ago. Police have not released the name. Buxton has been making prosthetics for 35 years. He said this isn't the first time he's heard of one missing. "You hear maybe one in every 10 years, this type of thing," he said. "It is odd." The discovery came about 2 weeks ago on 9th Street in Menasha. A woman walked outside her home at about 4:30 a.m. and found the prosthetic leg lying in her front yard. "Usually it's something simple to track down and get it back to them, but this is definitely not something you normally see," said Officer Aaron Zemlock with the Menasha Police Department. With no missing reports of any prosthetic legs that had gone astray, Menasha Police didn't know if the leg was stolen, lost, or simply thrown away. So they called Buxton for help. "Looking at the limb, I'm pretty certain I could know whether or not this is at least fabricated at my facility." He took a trip to the police department and said, "The leg looked familiar to me." After a little thinking, Buxton realized the prosthetic was his own work. And he said the patient had passed away some time ago, so obviously not actually using the prosthesis. So how it occurred that it ended up in a person's front yard, I could only venture to guess. Not long after the identification, Menasha police received a call of confirmation. A resident called and said he had moved into a house a couple of years ago and there was a prosthetic leg that had been left behind by the previous owner in the garage. The caller told police he had decided to throw the leg out a few weeks ago, about the same time the unclaimed leg was found. He stated the foot was sticking out of a garbage can, which I'm sure was enticing to someone going by. Now,
that's disturbing.
I'm saying, if I was driving by and I saw a prosthetic leg sticking out of a garbage can, oh, you bet your bottom dollar I would take it. But what kind of idiot then just tosses it in somebody's yard? I mean, free leg.
I mean, you know, at the very least, you see if you can make some sort of a home decoration out of it,
yeah.
Or perhaps a vase of some kind. Maybe by your door with umbrellas in it.
There's all kinds of things you could do with that.
Yeah, nobody values anything in this country.
Also, they're expensive.
Yeah.
They cost thousands of dollars. So,
we have to, 10 seconds here. So, as we wrap this up, in lieu of anything else, I'm just going to give it a fuck. There we go. Excellent. And with that, we bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every week, tape in the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. In the meantime, in between time, don't forget you can get this program as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. It's also available via iTunes, and you can take it with you on the road at mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. As always, we thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye now.